Hello and welcome to the Crisis Point Podcast. I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. In case you're wondering why I just paused there, because my light started to flicker. My power went off yesterday, so let's hope that doesn't happen during this live podcast. That would be awkward. Before I get started, just remind people to like and subscribe to the podcast. Also, if you're on YouTube, make sure you hit the little thing that tells you to get notifications. I was looking through some analysis, and I guess not a lot of people do that because I never say it because I don't do it myself sometimes. I forget. But anyway, go ahead and do that as well. So like, subscribe, get notifications, all that good stuff, and put a good review in at iTunes and wherever you listen to the podcast. Okay, so when I first became Catholic, I remember that, you know, I grew up Protestant, for those who don't know. I remember that the virtue of obedience was really drilled into me. The idea that obedience is the virtue that distinguishes Catholics from other Christians. It's what makes Catholicism work, so to speak. That was, after all, disobedience, after all, was the sin of Martin Luther. It's really what led to the Protestant Reformation, what led to millions of people breaking away from the Catholic Church, was the sin of disobedience ultimately. So obedience was the highest virtue. It's the Catholic virtue. Even the Orthodox are seen as being disobedient because they don't obey the Pope. And so therefore they're disobedient as well. And so that has always been, in my lifetime at least, as a Catholic for almost 30 years now, I'm coming up on 30 years next year as a Catholic. Well, at least as deciding to become a Catholic. I wasn't receiving the church until 93. But anyway, that was really been drilled into me and drilled to all Catholics. That's the key virtue, is the virtue of obedience. However, I think that there's been, if you look at church history, and if you look at how the virtue of obedience is understood today by many Catholics, I think that we have an unbalanced view of this virtue, an unbalanced view of obedience that has crept into Catholicism. If you look at, for example, pre-Reformation times in the church, we don't see quite the emphasis on obedience as the one virtue above all other virtues, and this idea, and this really kind of pushing of blind obedience. Now, I want to be clear before I continue. I'm not saying obedience is not a virtue. It absolutely is a virtue. It's a very important virtue. But like I said, I think there's an unbalanced view. If you look back before the Reformation, you see there's a lot of prelates, a lot of rulers who don't obey the Pope, don't obey their bishops. You know, bishops who don't obey the Pope, priests who don't obey the bishops, and it's really not considered the end-all, be-all, worst thing on earth. There's a story, I was just reading this recently, in the 10th century England, St. Dunstan, who was a Archbishop of Canterbury, considered one of the great saints, English saints, and he excommunicated some noble because, I can't remember now why, the noble was behaving terribly, and so he excommunicated him. Well, the noble ended up going to Rome, or sent his people to Rome, and had the Pope overturn the excommunication. And it's assumed that he basically paid some money, had that happen. So he came back to England, and you know what St. Dunstan did? He just said, no, you're still excommunicated. He still treated him as excommunicated. He did not basically follow along with what the Pope had told him to do. And this wasn't considered like the end of the world. It wasn't like all of a sudden there's this huge crisis, a schism with the English church or anything like that. It was simply like, yeah, that's nice, but I'm here on the ground. I know this guy should be excommunicated, and I'm going to keep him excommunicated. And the point there isn't to say that everybody's disobeying the Pope had no authority, like that. It's more to show that the idea of disobeying a religious superior in a situation like this, a practical situation like this, wasn't seen as the end of the world. St. Thomas, when he writes about obedience in the Summa Theologica, you see he also has a very balanced view of obedience. He talks about both the duties of the subject and the superior, the inferior and the superior. I think that's where our unbalanced view is. All of our emphasis today is on the person obeying, on the subject, the person who is being given the command. There's no real emphasis anymore on the superior giving the command. And I think, honestly, I think this is a root cause of our crisis today in the church. I really think it's a root cause. We see it very clearly, of course, in the abuse scandals that we saw lots of lay people who were afraid to report on priests who are doing terrible things because of this unbalanced view of obedience that they're somehow supposed to obey the church when it says to be quiet, or obey their priests and be quiet. Even people who were abused horribly, they had this idea that they couldn't say anything because that would be disobeying somehow. And so there's this idea that this unbalanced view of obedience that's all focused on the person who is given the command. And there's no focus on the duties of the person giving the command. And I saw this, the reason I wanted to do a podcast on this, because I've seen a few stories recently in the news that all, I think, tie into this, all show this root problem of a misunderstanding, a misunderstood view of obedience, an unbalanced view of obedience. The first was in the Pillar Catholic recently. And the title is Former Cleveland Seminarians Allege Sexual Coercion, Inadequate and an Inadequate Response. Basically, in the Diocese of Cleveland, some seminarians said that a priest harassed and manipulated them in 2019. We're not talking about pre-2002, anything that we're talking about just 2 years ago. He said I'll just read what it says in the start of the article. Three former seminarians say Cleveland diocesan and seminary officials failed to respond appropriately after a priest allegedly pressured them to take naked swims with him at a lake house and other locations, couching the invitations in both spiritual language and excessive alcohol consumption. And basically the story is at least three seminarians were coerced by a priest who had access to the seminary, had a key to the seminary to go into the gym, got to know these seminarians, and then basically coerced them to take to go skinny dipping with them in a lake. I guess he had access to a lake house as well up in Lake Erie. And it says the former seminarians say they were harassed and manipulated in 2019 by Cleveland priest Father James Cosgrove. They also alleged after they reported the misconduct and it was investigated, the priest still had access to seminarians and a key to the seminary. Says, while the Cleveland Diocese told the Pillar Thursday that the matter, quote, does not involve any conduct that could be reasonably considered to be coercive or harassing, end quote, one former seminarian called that response stunning. Stunning, horrifying is more like it. And we've seen this with, just to take an aside here, we've seen this with dioceses. They always emphasize if it's not a minor that's involved here, because they want it to be like, oh, well, we didn't hurt a minor. It wasn't a minor. As if it's not wrong and sinful if you do it to somebody who's over the age of 18. And we see that, and it also considered coercive or harassing. I don't see, if you read the story, I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. Clearly it's coercive. Basically the priest said things like, when urging the seminarians to skinny dip, the priest would tell them to be free before God and be naked before God. I mean, my goodness, it makes you want to take a shower after reading a story like this. And so, but there's three different problems with this. First, there is the problem of the abusing priest, which is the most obvious one, that he is abusing his authority. I mean, he didn't technically have specific authority of seminarians, but as any seminarian will tell you, or any priest will tell you, when they're in the seminary, every priest in the diocese has a certain authority over them. Because if all of a sudden a priest in the diocese reports to the diocese that this seminarian has problems or something like that, that seminarian can kiss his vocation goodbye. And so clearly the seminarians probably did feel a certain amount of pressure to go along with what the priest was telling them to do because they were afraid of being reported as being not cooperative, being resistant to, I don't know, camaraderie, whatever. So the problem is, first of all, this priest abused his position of authority and he abused the virtue of obedience with the seminarians. Second problem is obviously with the diocese. they clearly did not see this as a problem. If you read the article, you can see they don't really see this as some major problem to be dealt with, even though it's horrific, to be honest. I would also say this, I have to say very carefully, because I'm talking about the victims here, the seminarians. I would say that there's a problem involved with the seminarians, in the sense that I would hope that a young man who is raised in a properly formed, with a properly formed Catholic identity, if he heard a priest say, hey, let's go skinny dipping in a situation like this, his first reaction should be, get away from me. Get behind me, Satan, if nothing else. I mean, his alarm should be going off and he should not be going along with this. Yes, it might mean he could get in trouble or something like that, but I think he should know, every red alarm should go off. Any normal man, young man, should know this, especially in today's era when priests are under so much, should be under so much scrutiny because of what's happened in the past. A young man should know this. And so I think there's a problem there with how these young men are raised in their families, but also potentially how they're formed in a seminary. From what I understand and what I've seen, seminaries really drill home the virtue of obedience and that, well, I should say the obligation of obedience with the priest, with the seminarians as they become priests. It's drilled home. I don't think there's much done though to drill home to the seminarians that when you are a priest, you have certain obligations when you are commanding people to do things, when you have authority over people. All that's ingrained in them is you have to obey your superiors. And so I think that is a real issue right there, is that these seminarians, and they are victims, and I don't want to act like they're not victims or claim they're not, but they really do, it does really point to a problem. I would hope that my own son, for example, if he was in a seminary and some priest suggested this to him, he would say, get away from me, and would potentially report the person, depending on the situation. Another story, this was just published today in Crisis, and this was Matt, the author, I'm going to apologize if you're watching and listening to this because I'm going to butcher your last name. Matt Capodicunnel, I think is how you pronounce his last name. Anyway, it's on Crisis. I have a link to this story and the Cleveland story on in the show notes, so if you want to look at it. But in Crisis, hey, removing the Judases from the church. Basically, what happened was with Matt was he was discerning the vocation to the priesthood with the Jesuits. This is, I think, about 10 years ago. And he had a spiritual director who harassed him sexually, would basically ask him very uncomfortable questions that were beyond the normal of trying to figure out if a seminarian is healthy and things like that, spiritually healthy, psychologically healthy. And essentially, though, his article today is how difficult it is to report a situation like this. That he says that reporting the incident is a confusing process. They don't make it very clear. A lot of places, like the Jesuits, for example, don't make it clear how you should report these situations. Reporting the incident is a traumatic experience because you have to relive it. And that's every victim says that. And I can understand why. But what he also says is reporting the incident may result in nothing. Basically, you report it and nothing happens. And he says specifically one of the reasons this is because everybody who is involved in the process basically is part of the Jesuits or paid by the Jesuits or appointed by the Jesuits. As he says, he goes that the Jesuits compensate the victim advocacy coordinator and the third party investigator. The Jesuits select the members of the review board and the provincial makes the final decision. So what we can see is that the Jesuits are involved at every point of it. They have their fingers in it. And so there's not really a objective review of what's going on. And so this, again, is a situation where we have a priest who is abusing his authority by asking inappropriate questions to a seminarian and basically demanding answers. And okay, and in the final example I want to give, actually, I want to have a couple more examples. Another example is one that I had not in the news. It's a personal story I know of, and I can't reveal the names of the people. But I know of a couple young priests, recently ordained, who have been told by their diocese, by their bishop, if you don't get vaccinated for the COVID vaccine, then you won't be able to offer the sacraments. Basically, they'll get canceled. And these are wonderful young men, and they really want to know, they really want to follow the Lord. They feel like they have a strong vocation to the holy priesthood, and they are priests, but they're basically being told, if you don't get the COVID vaccine, you're not going to be able to have a sacramental life. You're not going to be able to distribute the sacraments to the people. And this is a real violation of their conscience. It's a real violation of their bodily integrity. I mean, our whole thing with the abuse scandal is that we have priests and bishops who are telling people, you know, basically violating their bodily integrity. Well, that's what they're doing in this situation. Not quite as extreme as that, but they're saying you have to put this into your body. We don't care what your conscience tells you. You have to put it into your body, or else you can't practice as a priest. You're going to get canceled. And so basically these priests have a choice. They can refuse to get the vaccine and probably just live in a ecclesiastical limbo for the rest of their priestly life, or for until this whole craziness goes away. Maybe they get a new bishop or something like that. But they're young priests, they're recently ordained, and now they have that as one option. A second option is that they get the vaccine, and then they possibly feel guilty for the rest of their life. They feel like they've conceded, they violated their conscience. And the only reason that they're able to practice as a priest is because they have violated their conscience. It's a terrible dilemma they're being put into. And this is like, these are wonderful young men from wonderful family. And so I just feel like here's another example of an abuse of the virtue of obedience. The bishop is telling them, get the vaccine or you cannot practice as a priest. And yet they're asked to violate their conscience. Now, the final news story I want to mention is in a diocese of Grand Falls, which is in Canada, the bishop there is mandated that you cannot attend mass without the vaccine. You have to show your vaccine passport, whatever the case may be in Canada. They have, I think, some type of vaccine portal or QR code or something like that. And so basically they have to show, lay people have to show their vaccination status that they've been vaccinated or else they can't attend mass. Now, the reason I think all these stories are important is because in every case, you could argue that in none of these cases were any of these people asked to sin. So in the Cleveland example, they're asked to skinny dip. Is that a sin? I mean, objectively, you can skinny dip with other men and it's not a sin. I mean, it's possible. I'm thinking maybe 100 some years ago, when a bunch of guys are out, young men are out and they're just hanging out and they go to a creek and they just are like, hey, let's take a swim. And they skinny dip. Okay, that's not a sin or anything like that. So they're not being necessarily asked to sin. When Matt Capodicano, I hope I pronounced it right, was asked as a Jesuit student some very uncomfortable questions, was it a sin for him to answer those questions? Not necessarily. When these priests are asked to get the vaccine, that probably is a sin. If they believe it is, but not necessarily a sin. If you look at like what the CDF said, it's not necessarily a sin to receive the vaccine. I know there's a lot of debate on that. And of course, the same thing with the bishop telling in Grand Falls, Canada, telling them to get the vaccine if they want to attend mass. The reason I bring that up is because we've got this idea, and I just saw this written recently in a student newspaper, that basically, Catholics are obliged to obey their superiors unless they're asked to sin. That's the key point that you hear Catholics make all the time, is that as long as you're not asked to sin, you have to obey your legitimate superiors, no matter what. So if the government authorities say you have to wear a mask, you have to wear a mask. If they say you have to get vaccinated, you have to get vaccinated. If they say you have to, if a bishop says to a priest, you have to do whatever, you know, answer these uncomfortable questions, you have to do it. That's our idea of obedience. That's the modern Catholic view of obedience, is that if you're not asked to sin, then it is then you have to obey. That is false. That is false. And I think what we have to look at are things like boundary violations. I'll call them boundary violations. Basically, this idea that we all have, individuals have certain boundaries that other people aren't allowed to violate. Like, for example, I couldn't go up to my neighbor and tell him and ask, start asking him personal questions of an intimate nature. I don't know him that well. And just say like, for example, ask him, oh, you know, something about his personal life with his wife or something like that. Like, oh, how do you guys, did you guys get in an argument last night? I mean, there's just an example where my neighbor said, did you and your wife get in an argument last night? What was it about? Those are boundary violations. He has no obligation to answer that question. I have no right to ask it. And what we're seeing here is these are boundary violations being committed. So the priest who's asking the seminarians to skinny dip, that's a boundary violation. The priest who's asking Matt to answer these uncomfortable questions that are not part of really assessing whether or not he has a vocation to the priesthood or to be a Jesuit, those are boundary violations. Obviously, the bishop who's ordering these priests to get vaccinated or stop sacramental life, it's a boundary violation. Asking somebody, you have to be vaccinated in order to attend mass, a boundary violation. So you get my point. What we're seeing here is this is a more comprehensive view of the virtue of obedience, includes the idea that there are certain boundaries that superiors, hard to say, are not allowed to really violate in a person does not have an obligation to have those boundaries violated, and they're not breaking the virtue of obedience. And so we can't just focus on this idea of, okay, you have to obey unless you're being asked to sin. No, that's not the case. If, for example, I do not want to, I have a valid reason, and I can determine that in a lot of ways, to wear a mask. I can't be demanded that I wear a mask, particularly when I know in my good conscience that wearing a mask does nothing. When all these studies say, so when studies show that, and the evidence shows that wearing masks, mandated mask wearing, does not help stop the spread of COVID, a virus, by the way, which we have a 99% survival rate on, and even higher if for certain age groups. And if I'm asked to do that, though, it's a boundary violation. It's not a sin to wear a mask. I'm not claiming it's a sin to wear a mask, but yet it's a boundary violation. It wasn't a sin necessarily. It's a sin for that priest to ask those seminarians to skinny dip, but it wasn't a sin for the seminarians to do it necessarily. But it's a clear boundary violation that they need to do that was committed here. And so what we need to do is we need to have this more holistic understanding of what obedience is, that includes these boundary violations, are not included in the virtue, I should say. Now, the question, though, is what is the mechanism for solving this? This idea of understanding what obedience really is. I think, first of all, it's education. It's really getting Catholics to understand, the laity, first and foremost, to understand what is obedience. And the reason I say the laity, first and foremost, because they need to teach their kids, so that when their kids grow up, and if they have a vocation to the religious life, whether it be the priesthood or to become a nun or something like that, they understand obedience better than just like, oh, I have to do it unless it's a sin. That there are situations that aren't technically sins, but yet they are things you don't have to obey on. And there needs to be that balance. Again, I'm not advocating going to the other extreme where priests are just not obeying what their bishop tells them, and nuns aren't obeying their superiors, anything like that. I'm saying a more balanced view, and we need to have education. Another thing we have to do is we have to make these things public when these things happen, and we have to resist them, particularly lay people who are in a better position to resist them than perhaps clerics are. And so, for example, when these seminarians, when this bishop said up in Grand Falls, Canada, when he said you have to be vaccinated or you can't attend mass, and they'll have ushers who will be checking your vaccine passport. You know what you do, whether you're vaccinated or not? You show up for mass, you walk in the door, you sit down at your pew. And when they say you have to leave, where's your vaccine proof? You just say, no, I'm not going to show it. They say, well, you have to leave. You say, no, I'm not going to. Just sit there. Just don't, obviously, no violence. I'm not advocating violence. I'm not advocating you disturb the mass being celebrated. You don't go up on the altar or anything crazy like that. You simply just sit there as you would any Sunday. And if they call the police, they call the police. If they drag you out of there, they drag you out of there. You just simply do not obey such an unjust order. You simply sit there and you act like you would if you're just going to mass and they didn't have this stupid mandate. That's what we need to do, because I think if enough people do that, there will be some pushback and bishops will realize they cannot violate these boundaries. They cannot just make any willy-nilly any commands they want to that are unjust. And so I really feel like that is an important thing we need to do. We need to understand again that obedience is a two-way street. There is the duties of the person who is being commanded, and there's the obligations of the commanding superior as well. And now, another thing I think we also want to talk about. We have a question. I want to answer one of these questions here, because I think where the rubber meets the road is how do we follow these different, as lay people or as clerics, how do we follow these different commands? So I have this question here, which says, Andrew asks, so when the pastors are enforcing the masking of the faithful via the bishop, what is one to do? The situation came up at the local and only chapel where the TLM is said by a visiting fraternity priest, FSSP priest. And that's kind of, I answered that before. You simply walk in and you ignore it. It's not, you just don't do it. If you don't feel comfortable wearing a mask, and you know that wearing a mask doesn't help any, because that's the big argument that is said that, oh, you're doing this because you love others and you're protecting whatever. Or it's said, well, it's not a sin to wear a mask, so you have to obey. No, I think you're violating a boundary, because we're talking about your personal space here, wearing a mask. You might have very valid reasons not to want to wear a mask. Like one, for example, it's stupid. And so if you just go in there and you just sit there and you would act like you would any other mask. I wasn't going to use this example because I know people will freak out. Some people freak out trying to act like the two are exactly comparable. But I do think somebody like Rosa Parks is a model for us. Now, Rosa Parks was facing much worse in her situation than some of us are facing now. But what I'm saying is her example of she simply got on the bus like she always does, and she just sat down in a seat that was available. And she just didn't get up when they told her to, because she just simply was like, you know, I'm just going to ride on the bus. I don't need to do anything. I don't need to get up and sit in a certain spot or stand in the back or anything like that. I'm just going to sit here. That's what we need to do. Just simply disobey the unjust order, disobey these orders that are that are violating boundaries. Even if it's not technically a sin to do it, it still can be a violation of boundaries. Because otherwise, what we're going to have is we're going to continue to have situations like what happened in Cleveland, what happened to in the Jesuits, what's happening up in different dioceses in Canada where they're mandating the mask, the vaccine, happening to priests that they're being forced to get the vaccine or else they're not going to be a celebrated sacraments. Until there's some pushback to make this a more balanced situation, like St. Thomas would teach, we really do need to have a pushback. And I realize there will be people who say, oh, there's this form of Protestantism coming out. I get that. And I do know that there's a danger on the other side. There's a danger in just simply not obeying orders when they're valid orders. But I do think we have to get this balance, and that's what we're going to have to do. So I'm going to leave it with that. And basically, I just want to encourage people to understand the virtue of obedience, understand what their obligations are. It doesn't mean we just can go around disobeying everything, but it does mean that when there's a clear boundary violation being asked in by a superior, we have the right and even the duty to just simply say, no, we're not going to do that, because that person, the commanding person has violated their obligations to the virtue of obedience. Okay. Well, I'll leave it with that for now. Until next time, God love you.